This show is part of the Goblin Broadcast Network, mate. You probably knew that, though.
Tome Episode 30. I am your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. The Tome is a D&D news and review podcast, and in this episode, we will be saying goodbye to the final dragon. Welcome again to episode 30 of The Tome, The Final Dragon. You might notice slightly different sound quality in part of this. I'm recording it as in my car as I'm in line to get the car seat inspected in my car, and I figured while I've got the time I should do something productive. Not a lot of announcements in this episode. I do have a lot of information called about and information and little bits and specifics about 4th edition that I'm going to be reporting fairly soon. I've set up an interview so you can get all kinds of information directly from them in a couple of months when I get a chance to get that out after the interview. Also, if you're interested in any little tidbits about 4th edition, anything that I'm finding, I'm compiling together and posting over at the forum. So go to thetomeshow.com, click on the link for the forum, and head on over there. Without further ado, I'm going to jump right into the final issue of Dragon Magazine here. Number 359 for September of 2007, brought to us by the wonderful people over at Paizo Publishing. We start off, of course, with an editorial. I normally don't talk about the editorials, but this one has some of the different editors that are involved in producing the show, the magazine, talking about the magazine and its history. The news bits that you get are about upcoming books, specifically Exemplars of Evil, The Fortress of the Yawn-Ti, which is the third in the series that started with Barrow of the Forgotten King and then continued to Sinister Spire, and one I'm very interested in, The Grand History of the Realms, which is a history textbook of the Forgotten Realms, which looks really cool. And I'm told, and I've actually read some things and included some in my 4th edition news, that it has some spoilers for what's going to be happening with the realms in 4th edition. And then you've also got some information about the different things that Paizo's putting out, some of their game mastery adventures, which look really cool, such as Seven Swords of Sin, Entombed with Pharaohs, Guardians of Dragonfall, Gallery of Evil, all kinds of neat things coming out, not to mention Pathfinder. You've got an announcement about the return of the classic Talisman game from Black Industries. Go to blackindustries.com and check out that. And let's see what else looks interesting in that mix. Green Ronin has put out their Freeports Pirate Guide books and their companions for the different systems out there. And so if you're a Freeport fan, and if you're not, you should be, go check that out. And then they've also got some first watch information about Neverwinter Nights 2, Mask of the Betrayer, which is the first expansion for Neverwinter Nights 2. Looks pretty cool. And another game called Caldseps Saga, which looks to be sort of a strategy card game. And then they also mention the fact that Goodman Games has accomplished a new milestone with the Dungeon Crawl Classics. They've now put out number 50 of the Dungeon Crawls called Vault of the Iron Overlord, with a pretty unique sort of concept and dungeon map layout that's actually on rotating discs that you can actually spin and change the dungeon as you play the game. And that's what looked interesting in the First Watch section. So this will be the last time you get news from Dragon on the show. So in the future, make sure that you're keeping up with the news segment of the show that I'll be starting up pretty quick here, and which will probably be dominated by 4th edition stuff. The first article is the top 10 issues of Dragon, 30 years of fabled tomes, compiled by Tim Hitchcock and Nicholas Logue. Special thanks to the message board readers at Paizo and Ian World. And basically, they just give you a quick rundown of the top 10 issues that they enjoyed for Dragon, and the reasons that they liked them, who the editor was, all kinds of little information. And I'm not going to go through all 10 of those, because that's not particularly interesting, at least in an audio format. It's interesting to look at, interesting to read, and sort of see where the history of the magazine's been. But we're moving on now. The next article is Unsolved Mysteries of D&D, compiled by Dragon and Dungeon editors, and illustrated by Jeff Carlisle. And this one is this really interesting little... these are some of the mysteries that never quite got explained that we've talked about, whether they be about the Mornland or the Draconic Prophecy of Eberron, or whether how Ed Greenwood himself fits into the Forgotten Realms and what the Abir of Abertorial means in the Forgotten Realms, who the mysterious Y in Maurer Castle, or what the Serpent is in Greyhawk. All kinds of these little mysteries about worlds. And they answered some things, and they don't answer some things, because some things are meant to be mysteries, such as who's the Lady of Pain, or what are the dark powers of Ravenloft. But then there's also some interesting metagame sort of mysteries that they fill in, such as lost manuscripts, some of the articles that were written or started that never quite got finished, such as some Planescape things, some things that were supposed to be continuations of the Book of Vile Darkness and the Book of Exalted Deeds books that never saw print. And also talking a little bit about some of the pseudonyms that authors have used in the past, specifically Richard Allinson and T.H. Lane, who are not real people. And then it finishes off with some missing persons, some people that used to be very active in the D&D world and then just sort of disappeared. The next article is called Time Dragon, A Worm for the Ages, by Mike McArthur, illustrated by Jason Engel. In this one, you get a new dragon, the Time Dragon, who is clearly an extremely powerful dragon, clearly an epic-level creature. The Wormling is CR-26. The Great Worm is CR-90. So this is a dragon that manipulates time and is crazy powerful. Then you get into the next article, Demonomicon of Igwiliv, Apocrypha. And here I thought the Demonomicon of Igwiliv was done. But no, they pull one out for me, and I am so happy. This is probably the best series of articles that I've, or at least for me, in the last several years of Dragon Magazine. By James Jacobs, illustrated by Andrew Howe. And what you get some more information about some of the things they didn't quite, little snippets of things they didn't get a chance to talk about in previous articles. You have a new demonic race and some information about the different kinds of creatures that exist in the Abyss. Some more information about different demon lords. You get a few fully statted out demon lords and a little bit of information about them, but clearly not as in-depth as you would have if the whole article was about them in the past. And for the most part, they're ones that haven't really been touched on in other places anyway. You haven't seen these demon lords in Hordes of the Abyss. You know, you haven't seen these things in Wizards of the Coast things or in Paizo's repertoire before. So you get some new demon lords that, you know, that are really kind of interesting to mix things up a little bit. I mean, when you have the infinite layers of the Abyss, you should have some different things. The next article is called 1d20 Villains, D&D's Most Wanted, Preferably Dead, by Jason Bowman, James Jacobs, Mike McArthur, Eric Mona, F. Wesley Schneider, Todd Stewart, Jeremy Walker, and illustrated by John Gravato. And what this is it's a fun little series of pages where they illustrate some of the major villains of all the different D&D worlds, and the idea being that you have 20 of them, and they're all marked with 1 through 20 on a d20, so you could roll a d20 and say, oh, look, Manshun shows up. Oh, look, there's Loth, you know, different things like that. You get some of the origins of these characters, what they've recently been up to, and then you get a little rules snippet about for each one, either a feat or an artifact or some sort of little rule snippet for each one. Sometimes a magic item, that kind of thing. The villains that are mentioned are Meepo, a legendary kobold hero with a shotgun, the Lord of Blades from Eberron, Manshun from the Forgotten Realms, El Tomarast, who's one that I hadn't heard of prior to this, but he looks pretty cool, from Greyhawk, probably why I've never heard of him, because I'm not a huge Greyhawk player. Cuse, who's been recently featured in the Age of Worms adventure path, Artemis and Truri from the Forgotten Realms and the Drizzt stories, Dragatha, who is a Dracolich from White Plume Mountain, Tharizdun, the famed deity of the Temple of Elemental Evil, Eklavdra, a drow from the Demon Web Pits storyline, Asarak, the Demi-Lich from the Tomb of Horrors classic storyline, Ayaz from Greyhawk, Grazd, the Demon Lord, Igwilliv, of course, the witch, who likes to play with demons, I guess. Orcus, also a powerful demon lord who is going to be playing a more prominent role in 4th edition. Lord Soth from Dragonlance and Ravenloft. Demogorgon, a demon lord. Vecna, the once wizard, once lich, now god of Ravenloft. Loth, the spider queen, deity and demon lord for the drow. Tiamat, the five-headed dragon of Dragonlance fame, but also showing up in many other incarnations. And number 20 is Count Strahd von Zarovich from Ravenloft. The next article is Treasures of Greyhawk, Magic of the Company of Seven by Gary Holian and Rick Miller, illustrated by Jason Engel. And basically, you get... So there's seven classic heroes of Greyhawk fame. It was the original party that was being played through Greyhawk that sort of ran through the adventures and ran through the world before there actually were adventures or there was a world. And so you have some of those characters and some of the magic items that they might have had or been involved with. You have Heward's Bell, Heward's Lyre of Truth. Some of the other names you might notice and recognize are Kogtums. There's Merlians, Nolzer, Qual, Tasha, and more. And basically you get 4 or 5 pages of all kinds of new magic items that you might throw into your game. Let's take a quick little break here, see what is going on with the folks over at a podcast that I've really been getting into lately, from Daniel Perez, and he talks about how you can use the real world as a inspiration for your game.
On tour with a regular traveler. The Roman Colosseum was begun in 80 BC during the reign of Emperor Vespasian at the height of the empire. It could hold 50,000 spectators, which could be shuffled in or out as efficiently as in modern stadiums. A wooden floor covered a network of tunnels, hiding gladiators and animals before it was their turn to fight to the death in the grand arena. On tour with the gamer traveler. The Roman Colosseum was begun in 80 BC during the reign of Emperor Vespasian, who was an 18th level fighter. It could hold 50,000 spectators, which could be shuffled in or out at a rate of between 15 to 20 per round. A wooden floor covered a dungeon crawl, hiding gladiators and animals before it was their turn to roll for initiative in the grand arena. The Gamer Traveler podcast combines gaming and travel all in one. In each episode, we feature a location around the world, learn about its history and travel appeal, and then find ways to use it in your games. We also have sound scene tours and interviews with other gamer travelers. Learn more by visiting thegamertraveler.com, where you can see the show notes, subscribe to the podcast, and post in the forums. The Gamer Traveler Podcast, because our world is the best campaign setting. thegamertraveler.com.
And that was Daniel Perez of The Gamer Traveler. Head on over to Gamer Traveler and check that out. Back to the final issue of Dragon Magazine. Next up is Goodbye and Hello as Always, One Last Evening with the Wizards 3 by Ed Greenwood, illustrated by James Zong. And in this one, you have a story. I normally don't really get into the fiction in Dragon Magazine, but this was an Ed Greenwood one, and it was The Wizards 3. It doesn't give you anything rules-wise. It doesn't give you anything setting-wise. But what it is a conversation between Rathen, Elminster, Dalimar, and Mordenkainen. Some of the most powerful wizards in any of the D&D settings in history. Followed up by the appropriate Elminster versus Raistlin article by Cam Banks, illustrated by Steve Ellis. And in this article, we detail if Elminster and Raistlin were to fight, who would win. And it was okay. I was expecting something really cool out of this. Honestly, I love both of those wizards immensely, and I would have been happy to have seen a decision made either way. But we didn't really get that. We sort of got a cop-out. We said Elminster wins if this sort of thing happens. Raistlin wins if this sort of thing happens. It wasn't as good as I was hoping, but it was very entertaining. The next article is The Ecology of the Tarrasque by Ed Greenwood and Jonathan M. Richards, illustrated by Peter Bergting. Ooh, I didn't even realize when I read this that Ed Greenwood was one of the authors. Very cool. The Tarrasque, if you're unfamiliar, is the gargantuan lizardish massive creature of death that has existed in D&D history for a long, long time as sort of the ultimate Godzilla of D&D. And we finally get some information on the Tarrasque. It's always been sort of a mysterious creature. It shows up. It can only be killed in very specific certain ways. And now we get a little bit of fun and little information about it. We get some history on the Tarrasque. We don't actually get the sort of ultimate history of the Tarrasque. We still don't know exactly where it came from or what it's all about. But we also get some of the physiology. We get some of the game history, the metagame history of the Tarrasque. We get some different plots that you might use, some adventure hooks and that kind of thing that might involve bringing the Tarrasque into your game. And all in all, I actually learned something about the Tarrasque. It's one of those monsters that's always around in D&D, but very seldom gets used because it's an incredibly powerful creature, and how does it really fit in, you know? It doesn't get used very much, but I really learned something from it, from this article, and I was highly entertained. It was really good. And then you even get a little snippet of the Monster Hunter Society, which was what was going on with the ecology articles back when I first started reading Dragon. And I always loved the Monster Hunter Society sort of theme for the ecology article, so I was really glad to see at least a little bit of a nod to that, and that was really cool. Next up is the Savage Tidings article, Demon Days, by Wolfgang Bauer, illustrated by Ben Wooten. This article is chock full of spoilers, because what this article is it starts off with a large summary of all of the adventures that have led up to this point in the Savage Tide adventure path. So they give you a little, Wolfgang gives you a little blurb about each of the chapters, I guess you would say, of the adventure path that led up to what's been going on. It sort of gives you a recap of this is what you've done so far, just to help you get yourself ready for that last big fight at the end. And then it goes through some allies that you might have in the Abyss getting ready for this big last fight, some of which might be NPCs in the game, some of which might be possible replacement PCs if one of yours doesn't make it through that big fight. And then it gives some thoughts on what might happen after the fight's over. Then we get Volo's Guide, Mythdorannor, City of Song, by Eric L. Boyd, with special introduction by Ed Greenwood, illustrated by Jeff Carlisle, and cartography by Rob Lazzaretti. And this one is all about Mythdorannor. If you haven't been keeping up on some of the current events, I guess, in the Forgotten Realms between the novels and some of the adventures, there are certain things that affect what has been going on in Mythdorannor lately. City of the Spider Queen has some effect. Shadowdale, the adventures, and Anorak, the follow-up to that adventure, have some effect. The Last Mythal series, the novel Blackstaff, the War of the Spider Queen novels, all of these have some impact on what's going on in Mythdorannor lately. But The short of it is that Mithranor has been retaken by the elves. The elves have come back in a crusade. They've taken back Mithranor. They've restored the Mithil. Erevan Teshur, who is the main character from the last Mithil series, sort of rewrote the Mithil and reconstructed the Mithil. He's now the High Mage of the city. It's still in ruins. It still has its issues, its problems, and that kind of stuff. But they're clearing it out, and they're cleaning up the city, and they're making it an elven community again. So they're trying to bring it back to its former glory. They've got all the demons and devils out. They've got all the drow out. And they're working on getting all these monsters and that kind of stuff out of the way so they can reconstruct this ancient gem of the Forgotten Realms. The Eberron Dragonmarks article, Echoes of the Morning by Keith Baker, illustrated by James Zong. And I'm really glad to see that Keith Baker actually wrote the whole thing. Something that I wish they would have done more often with the Forgotten Realms, the Volo's Guide articles. I wish they could have gotten Ed Greenwood to write more of those. But Eric Boyd is a good substitute in there. But Keith Baker did write this last Dragonmarks article, and this one is dealing a lot with the morning. The day of mourning, the Mornland that used to be the Empire of Sire that was destroyed during the last war, that's now this big, misty, mystical, crazy place. Does he reveal the secret of the morning and what happened? No, he doesn't. But he does give a bunch of different options. He sort of explains that he doesn't have a set answer to what happened. There are some different possibilities, and he wants to keep it a mystery because that's part of the setting, is that there's things out there that are mysterious, and if it works out that you have a chance to fill it in your game, then he gives you some options and some ideas, and you can do what you want with that. There's also some information about what happens when you travel through the mists and through the Mornland and what kind of effect that can have on you, and what might happen if you are a creature that is born in the Mornland. Some of the ways that might sort of mutate you and turn you into some sort of freakish sort of creature, I might say. Then you get into the Sage Advice section, and this is the end of all things. So he gets into a lot of death questions and answers a lot of those, since this is the last of these articles. Then we get into the Class Act section. That means we're almost done. We're rounding it out. We have the Adventure section by James LaFond Sutter, illustrated by Jeff Carlisle. It is called Body Modifications, and it is all about ways that you can modify your body, whether it be embedding items into your body, putting your spells tattooed onto your body instead of having a spell book, having little pockets sewn into your flesh so you can hide things, creating an extra body slot by weaving or embedding rings and what have you into your different parts of your body, or putting a holy symbol permanently etched into your body, that kind of thing. The Arcane section is A Wizard's Guide by Amber E. Scott, illustrated by Steve Ellis. And once again, Amber E. Scott gives us a 2-page summary of what it is to run a wizard. Again, nothing new, nothing innovative here, but it's a neat little cheat sheet. If you're having somebody playing a wizard and they haven't played one before, hand them this and give them a little bit of an idea of what makes a good wizard. Then the Divine article, Forgotten Faiths by F. Wesley Schneider, illustrated by Jason Engel. And this one is all about some of the gods that have shown up through the history of D&D, but have since sort of faded away and disappeared. They include Ezra, the guardian of dead gods, Canchelsis, Mellifleur, the queen of air and darkness, and Raxavort. Under Warrior, you get The Universal Key by Jeremy Walker, illustrated by John Gravato. And this is sort of, here are some options for people who don't have the rogue in the party. Some ways to get past your locks and that kind of thing. You have the acid injector, the bolt cutter, sledges and toolkits to break things down, all kinds of stuff like that, including a new magic item called the Skeleton Key. And then you have a finale article by Monty Cook, quote, "A gamer who's really going to miss Dragon," illustrated by James Zong. And this article is called Arcane Lore and Abilities. And I tell you, if Monty Cook decides to write you an article, then you find a way to print it, and that means that you create a finale section. So you have an Arcane Lore section here, and it's just different feats that a wizard could take, some sort of arcane caster, I guess, could take. The idea is that it's only available to people who have studied all kinds of ancient arcane secrets, and they've learned things, and it's changed them. You know, you have the countenance of the mage, the ears of the mage, the eyes of the mage, footsteps, hands, name, presence, voice. And basically, it gives you certain bonuses to skills, and it gives you certain abilities when you have this feat. But they all have pretty hefty requirements, like you have to have a decently high intelligence, a decently high charisma. Plus, all of them say that you have to be an arcane caster of at least a certain level, and the lowest one is 9th. So you have to have some pretty strong arcane ability to start off with. Of course, we have Nodwick, Dork Tower, Order of the Stick as our usual comic section, but we also have a final new installment of What's New with Phil and Dixie. As usual, the comics are hilarious, if not more so than usual. Nodwick deals with some of the classic ancient villains of past versions of D&D. Dork Tower talks about it going dark and the end of everything, and it has a little Soprano spoof to it. Order of the Stick finishes off their storyline, and you get to see Dragonfly off into the sunset, and then you get the Phil and Dixie, which talks about the ending of all things, and that is the end of Dragon Magazine as we know it. All in all, once again, you get an extra large issue here, and the cover price is $10.99, and I would say it's worth the cover price, and if you have a subscription, even better. Well, that's the final issue of Dragon Magazine. As always, I urge and welcome listeners to help the show in any way you can. One of the best ways is to participate. Send in your emails or audio comments to thetomeshow@gmail.com, or let me know if you're interested in reporting for the show regularly. You can also instant message me, join the Tome Yahoo group, leave an audio, or call the Tome hotline at 206-888-6126. That's 206-888-6126. You can also dig the show at dig.com, vote for us at Podcast Alley, or leave an iTunes review. All of these things help the show get noticed, and I really appreciate that. And most of these things can be found at the website at www.thetomeshow.com. Also, don't forget to check out Tome's partner podcast, Fistful of Comics and Games, at www.fistfulofcomics.com, and Gamers Haven at www.canadiancrusaders.com. This has been episode 30, the final dragon of
The Tome.